Hi everybody, Steve Savitsky, and today we have Ruchama Foreman, who is a very noted writer, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Great to be here.
That's very, very good to hear that. So I've been reading a lot about you. That's the great part about today's world. You could go online, you could read everything about somebody, and you feel you know them even before you've ever met them. So I guess you're really kind of unique in the sense that there are not that many people who are Orthodox Jews who actually write fiction for the general public, correct?
That's correct. There's one or two others out there doing it, and there are more happening every day.
Well, that's good. So let me hear a little bit about what prompted you to do this. I mean, I read a little bit about your background. Obviously, it seems from both parents, they certainly gave you the right push to get into this thing, right?
I would say they gave me the push in the sense of who they are, not necessarily anything they said. My father just always loved telling stories growing up. Consider him a storytelling man, and yet it was a real raconteur. And my mother is a larger-than-life personality. She's from Morocco, and just it's like I had great stories happening all around me when I was growing up. I didn't have to work that hard.
So where did you grow up, actually?
Silver Spring, Maryland.
Silver Spring, Maryland. Okay, excellent. Very, very nice. And so what did you need a lot of training? You had to go to school to become a writer, or just all natural?
I had wonderful teachers. I went to Hebrew Academy of Greater Washington and Yeshiva High School of Greater Washington. And I would every now and then I would have a fantastic writing teacher. And then I was in Eretz Yisrael for about 10 years, and I was just taking courses, catch as catch can. And then finally I reached the point when I decided that I had to get serious training. I went back to America, and I got my MFA from Brooklyn College.
Oh, sure. Great.
And
sure.
I would say the experience of being judged by non-religious peers, secular peers, the world at large, it was very helpful into seeing what flies and what doesn't.
Now, when you decided to write, these different novels, for how many have you written so far?
It's hard to say. I can't even tell you myself, because I've ghostwritten a lot of things that have been published.
And what does that mean? That you do that for somebody else, and that what it is? What do you mean?
Right. I remember actually when I was single, I ghost wrote a marriage manual that became something of a bestseller, for a well-known Rebbetzin. I just did the first three chapters, and then she got a publisher, and then she continued the rest. Mm-hmm. And I've done Holocaust legacies, memoirs, and all kinds of books and all sorts of topics. But my own work, I've done children's books, and then. In terms of novels, I had my Seven Blessings novel, and then, thank God, I just got my second official novel, for the secular world, accepted for publication with a New York Review of Books. That just happened in the past 2 weeks, so I'm very excited about that.
Is it hard to get someone like that to publish a book? Is it very competitive? Is that what it is?
It's a publishing miracle. No other words for it. Because to get something out there in which... I'd say to if I was going to be venting my spleen or doing a whole expose about the horrors of modern orthodoxy or orthodoxy, then it would be a cinch. It would be very easy, and especially if it was filled with all kinds of titillating material, that would be make it hard for my children to read this. In that sense, yes, it's very hard because you're kind of like writing with your hands tied behind your back. It's sort of like imagine writing something in which you can't use the letter O. You're going to be stopped a lot. It's going to be hard to be writing. So it is hard. And even for people who could be writing with a full deck, publishing has become like blood sport. It's near impossible. So
is that just because there are just so many people writing that there's are they publishing less? Well, what's the reason?
Why has publishing become so hard? Well, I think that because as there's more, with computers, people are reading less, and also I think with the self-publishing options, there's so many books that are glutting the market. I don't know. Why is, I mean, a lot of people have been saying the novel has been dying. The novel hasn't been dying, just that people reading the novel have been dying. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
I guess so. So really what you're saying is that there are less people reading. I mean, not that many people reading today anymore because people don't have the patience. They don't have the, I guess, the desire. There's so much around today that you're competing with everything. So
right. Oh, overstimulation. That's it. Overstimulation. And in a funny way, I think that Shabbos is going to be saving the novel, or the Jewish novel. I just find that there's so much happening in, you know, with all the magazines that are coming out.
I mean, you can't spend
them. You have a captive audience.
Right. Well,
so
no matter
I really
how
think
long
that Shabbos...
Right. No matter how long
right.
Shabbos
it's,
is, you've got so much reading
literature,
material.
Ironically.
And do you read a lot of these magazines that come out?
Well, I read a lot of them because I give writing workshops, and a lot of my participants are from these communities, and I want to know where they're getting published because I give a writing newsletter and I let people know what's what, and I also just love to keep my pulse of what's happening in the writing world. And it's you know, there's a lot of bad fiction being written, but there's a lot of wonderful fiction being written as well. It's changing. It used to be that people were only writing stories that were solely existed just to inspire you. But now I would say the topic of what can be an acceptable Jewish story has broadened. If it can make you explore a position you didn't hold before, something that's going to deepen your insight, something that's going to provoke, it's broadened. I find that very exciting.
Hmm. Interesting. That's really interesting. That's really great. So your first book, which was pretty well received, was something I've been reading about a little bit. Seven Blessings. So what was that book about?
It was I guess in a nutshell, it was about matchmakers and match seekers in Yerushalayim. And I tried to take the concept of match and broaden it so that it was really about, you know, the match between you and your neighbor, you and getting the right Torah learning environment. Match is a metaphor, really, like, you know, Hashem is really making, they say, you know, the Medrash says Hashem is making matches all day long.
Sure,
because really,
yeah,
all of life is really a shidduch. Everything has to be, you know, matched.
Right. Matches are going on all the time. We don't know about them, but they're going on all the time, right?
Right.
So so this was published by, it wasn't a company, it was St. Martin's Press, right?
Right.
And the distribution of this, like the book, the novel, was it to the general public? And what percentage of people who read it came from the secular world or the non-Jewish world? And do you know that at all or not?
I don't know, but I know that if I look on... I just Google my book and I write book clubs. I see that it was Reform Judaism chose it for one of their significant Jewish picks. Hadassah chose it for one of its for its book club, which is a major thing. They've got about 300 book clubs in America. The 92nd Street Y was a book. You know, they chose it for their book club, and also in Alaska. So it was like in all book clubs all over America, definitely among Orthodox, conservative, and Reform communities. In terms of, like, it was reviewed in non-Jewish places. Let's say like the Dallas Morning News and Bergen Record. I think mm-hmm. there was also like a little bit of a scandal connected with it in. You remember Wendy Shalit's article about Jewish fiction?
Right.
So that was one of the stories, one of the novels that was mentioned. I was supposed to be the one of the insiders, if you recall what the whole problem was about.
And so when you wrote the novel, you wrote it. Did you write it to inspire people, entertain people? What was the goal? Or both?
It was to really bring people into my world, into this world, because I just, you know, like it says, "B'makom she'eini shishadeliyoti." You know, when the place where there's nobody doing this, somebody has to do it. I see it as if you've got all this great Jewish religious material out there. It's waiting to be colonized, and it's like this literary map that's getting colonized. And if I don't get there first, someone else is going to get there before me, and they're going to come there with their you know, like a huge agenda. Usually it's going to be somebody who has left the community. And I wanted to get there first. And I don't know. I mean, there are so many reasons I want to write. I had lived in Eretz Yisrael for 10 years. I really wanted to bring the whole exciting Torah learning opportunities for women that were happening at that time to bring it out. And I knew that if I were to write about that directly, nobody would be reading about it. So I sort of, my sneak attack was to do it through matchmaking. Now, the thing is this, if you use the word, anybody who approaches writing fiction and says they want to do it for outreach reasons, it's going to doom it, because then you're not going to be able to write an honest story. So, like, it's this whole sort of, like, funny way of writing in which, at the back of my mind, I'm very excited when Reform Judaism and Hadassah and all these other places picked up my book, because, you know, it was bringing a world to them that they never would have seen before.
Exactly.
And that is a goal at the back of my mind. But if it's at the forefront of my mind, then it dooms my novel to be just like, I'm just going to inspire the people who are already inspired. I won't reach anybody. Right. So that's always like the dance that I have to be doing.
And what about the second one that was called what?
That's In the Courtyard of the Kabbalist. I don't know if it's going to change. It's just like this. It might change to something else, but for now that's what it's called.
And what's it about?
And it's about an assistant to a Kabbalist in Yerushalayim who has an unlikely friendship with a deformed Arab janitor who works on the Temple Mount. And there's also a slight love interest, but don't worry, not between them. And it's that's basically it. It all takes place in the courtyard of an elderly Kabbalist.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very interesting. I guess you have to be very careful when you write the books, because you want to make sure there's nothing in it that people are going to find objectionable. Is that hard to write in a novel today with, PG or whatever you want to call it?
I'm sorry, what do you mean, PG?
No, in other words, that's parental guidance. I mean,
I see.
Yeah, whatever the movies talk about when they give you their ratings or so on, but...
I see.
You're saying you write it in such a way that everybody could read it, right?
Right, it is hard. I find in a way, though, it's wonderful in the sense that it forces me to write better. Since I can't rely on, you know, that kind of titillation, then I'm really forced just to write well and to really get into my characters, and I think people appreciate that. I have to find other ways to really be provocative. Mm-hmm. Instead of being, you know, sexually provocative, I can be intellectually or spiritually provocative.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that could be very exciting as well.
Mm. Now, I know in addition to writing novels, you also, you know, you do workshops. And you also had edited something called Everyone's Got a Story, right? 41
right.
Short stories from a new generation of Jewish writers. So what's that? That sounds pretty exciting.
That was like in 2008, Judaica Press did that. And I thought it was really nice in the sense that I don't think we'd ever had a guidebook for how to write in addition to the stories. The fact that everyone in there was from my workshop was thrilling to me, and also many people, their careers got made. After the book came out, I got besieged by emails from editors or magazines asking for my students' names, and many of them went on to, you know, to become big, to write frequently for the Jewish community.
Oh, really?
That was nice.
And it started with your workshops and everything?
A lot of people, in other words, a number of people got some nice starts for themselves, and definitely.
And when do you have time? I know you have a big family with five children, is that right? Or?
Halavai, four children.
Four children,
Okay,
I read it wrong, I'm sorry. So four children and married and a full life, so when do you get time? Are you very disciplined how you write?
I guess it's... To me, it's like davening, or eating. I just don't have a choice. I have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I just, like, I don't, it's not like a cute thing that I do as a hobby, you know? It's just something that I must do. And when I'm not writing, it's sort of like the world feels a little askew to me, you know?
Do you write every day? I mean, how does it work? Do you have a schedule?
I think I write every day. I'm pretty sure I put in a couple hours every day.
Really?
Wow. Right now, though, I'm just, like, trying to I just have to get up a website. My publishers are asking me to get a website up, and just having to navigate this whole thing of social media and Facebook, Schmacebook, all these things. I feel like an immigrant when it comes to these things. So I'm going to have to somehow learn how to master these things.
So you don't have a Facebook. You don't have you don't have a website.
I have something, but last time I changed something on it was maybe 2 years ago. Uh-huh. So. I think they say better to have no Facebook than to have a bad Facebook presence. So, I don't know.
So I guess the minute you finish writing one book or one novel, you're kind of thinking about the next. So I presume you're already on to your next project, right?
Well, I'm always writing short stories.
Okay.
I write a lot of short stories, and that's... there's a number of projects that I'm playing around in my mind with what I want to do next. And I'm considering how difficult it was to get a novel published about Yerushalayim. Mm-hmm. It, this time around, it's making me really reconsider whether I want to write about Yerushalayim again.
Uh-huh.
And you could see in the publishing world, Arab books about Muslims and Arabs were very popular. Ones about Israel were not. And it's just, it was a very long haul to get this book published.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with the Temple Mount. There's archaeology. It's something that's going to probably be, it's a different kind of novel than my first one. It's something that has to do with sacred space and who owns sacred space.
Ah, interesting. So when you publish, let's say, through one of these publishers, I mean, do they send you out on a tour, like on the circuit, to be on radio or TV or other programs so that you can promote the book?
I think they really, these days, they expect writers to be doing a lot of the promoting themselves. The olden times of people sending people on book tours by foot,
right,
or by bus or airplane. I think those days are, those are reserved for people who are getting huge advances. And I don't know if they even find them so worthwhile. People instead will do blog tours these days,
mm-hmm,
or they'll try to do a lot of things by radio or by phone. But as much as I ended up going to different parts of America with Seven Blessings just because, I would call up a shul and they would sponsor me and they would fly me out. And, you don't need necessarily a publisher or publicist to do this. You can make it happen yourself.
Yeah, I got you. So they would do that on their own. Well, that's really very interesting. So you think we're going to see a lot more of, let's say, religious Orthodox Jews, male, female, who are now out there writing fiction, and this will be something pretty common that we're going to see? Or, are you and the two other people you mentioned kind of, out there by yourself?
I'm hearing of more people. There's Helen Shankman. She just had a wonderful story that got published in Kenyon Review, which is a very highbrow place to get published in.
Mm-hmm.
There's somebody, I think, called Gila Green in Canada who's having some literary fiction coming out. There are, I don't know, every time I did, there's somebody called Matthew Goldberg who's writing fiction. I think he's a Lubavitcher. I now that I'm in this whole viewpoint, it just seems that I'm stumbling across more people. I have a feeling I'm going to be meeting more people who are doing this.
Wonderful.
Maybe when Risa Mill and I were doing this, 10 years ago, there weren't that many. But now I think it's going to start getting more popular.
Fantastic. Well, that's great. So you're a trailblazer. Terrific. Well, listen, I think the people in the audience are going to... When is this new book coming out, by the way?
They say the fall of 2013.
Okay.
I hope you get it reviewed here. That'll help.
Absolutely. No question about it. The Jewish Action will be happy to do
Wonderful.
That. But anyway, everybody in the listening audience, we've been talking to Ruchama Feuermann, who, as you understand from the interview, has written two wonderful, wonderful novels, many short stories, and is a trailblazer for Orthodox women, Orthodox people, and as far as able to write a novel, which is interesting for the general public, interesting basically for every Jew, no matter where they are, and even non-Jews alike. Well, thank you so much, and good luck to you in your writing. We look forward to reading more about what you're doing, okay? Take care. Have a wonderful
day. Thank you. It was a pleasure talking with you.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.